Give me just an answer, and I'll give you an example here, Dave. Let's just give me an answer. And
Ian's
I'll,
hair.
Ian's hair?
Yeah.
What's the best looking part of this show?
So it doesn't have to be a correct answer. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
I'm just going to put my headphones on.
Please do.
Because I can't hear my voice in my ears, which I find really disturbing.
Now, Dave, we just went to a diner and had a meal.
Had some diner food.
Right. You had a milkshake. Now, folks, I'm going to play a little guessing game with you right now.
Okay.
Dave had something on top of his milkshake. What do you think Dave had on top of his milkshake? Did he have?
I know the answer. I know
okay,
the answer.
What was it?
Well, you can. What were your choices?
My choices were.
Okay, let me hear.
Meatballs.
Nope.
Cherries.
Nope.
Cornflakes.
Maybe.
A second milkshake.
Yes.
The answer was cornflakes.
That is true. It was cornflakes sprinkled on top, which was okay.
But
and
do
it
you
also had
be...
like that kind of. It had that kind of whipped cream that doesn't quite taste like anything on top of it.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with that.
Listen, I'm going to say that.
I should say okay. I am mildly satisfied that that is on there.
All right. We don't normally do restaurant reviews, but we may do a little bit of a restaurant review
okay,
here.
Sure.
So let me just get into that milkshake for a second.
Okay.
I had issues with that they put the cornflakes on top.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's what I think is going to happen. You ate with a spoon.
Yes.
The topping on your milkshake.
Which I would do anyway.
Which you would do,
yeah.
But not necessarily someone who's thirsty. Like to me, what they would
if
do.
If you're thirsty, I don't recommend you get a milkshake because that is the least
thirst-quenching.
But
my worry about it is that these jagged cornflakes are going to end up at the bottom of your milkshake,
sure.
Going up a straw, slicing your throat from the inside, cutting it to bits. I mean, that's not a pleasant thing to go up a straw. People don't like drinking a bunch of cornflakes with a straw. So keep those away from a milkshake.
I'm not a huge cornflakes fan, but I know this, that if they are in milk for any amount of time, they become very soft.
That's right.
So
unless you're thirsty and drinking it quickly, in which case, no dice.
Yeah, I think your scenario that you're painting, I think, is kind of far-fetched.
Okay. What is the plus scenario that, crunchy bits, that's nice?
Yeah,
and that
I'm not saying I thought it was great. I thought it was okay.
Because cornflakes, I could almost see frosted flakes.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that's got a little...
Zip-a-da-zap-boom. Bam-ba-bang.
Exactly the word. Exactly the word I was going to use.
Right. It's not like, shreddies. You wouldn't put shreddies on top of your ice cream.
No, you wouldn't put shreddies on top of your ice cream.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put... Well, I'm going to go on a little rant. I know
please.
That I ranted about this earlier with you, but I'm going to do it live because my wife, who does not eat cereal, although in her defense, our cereal cabinet is stock full of cereal that only she wants, only she likes.
What would be in that cereal?
It's called Kashi. Kashi. It's not great.
It's the kind that you see in movies when they want to show the person's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on the table.
Well, you're healthy because you don't eat it. You just leave it sitting in the cupboard, taking up all the other possible cereal space.
Yes.
With the stupid cereal. And not just one box of it. Three boxes of it. All the same box. It's like, did I have this already? Oh, I did. Because I never actually eat it. I'll just put this on the shelf with the other two.
So you're not thinking that there were two boxes on the shelf and they made it and now there's a third box of
cashew. Now that you say that.
Because it's all organic and that kind of business inside.
Sounds sexy.
Okay.
Sexy cereals.
So you've been having some cereal problems at home?
My wife knows I like cereal and I basically like maybe two or three cereals a lot and the rest
name
I'm okay
them.
With. Raisin Bran.
Okay.
Those mini wheats with the frosted mini wheats kind of things.
All right, the brown sugar kind or the
no,
white
just plain.
Sugar.
All right,
very good.
And
no plain but
Muffets.
Okay,
Muffets, which is the only cereal you can get that is just one thing, which is I think oats, and they're shredded oats.
Right,
but they're oats.
But it's
there's nothing else in it.
It's the Muffet part of the oat shaft.
The Muffet part of the oat shaft.
Yeah,
that's exactly how I like to think of it.
Yep.
And then I also like a raisin granola kind of thing.
Oh, it's very similar to a Raisin Bran.
Not really. Because it's a different,
okay.
It's not bran flakes. It's
okay.
A different, it's like a nugget thing, right? It's like an Odie nugget. It's part of the Odie nugget part of the shaft.
Sure, okay.
Those are basically it. Everything else I'm okay with, but I'm not crazy about. And I don't really like sweet cereals that much, so I know that they all cereals have sugar in them, but but anyway.
Except for that one, that's the one thing.
This one, the most horrible. So Lisa.
The Muffet. No, you said the Muffets only.
Oh,
have
Muffets.
One.
Oh, that's right. They don't. But I add sugar to them. You know, I just put a little bit of a.
Right, but that's
sugar.
Less sugar than the company adds.
That's what I heard. That's what I tell myself when I do it.
Yep.
I'm a good boy. My wife bought Weetabix, and here's the question: why are they still around? Because it is the worst cereal, bar none.
It's worse
ever
than
made.
A Muffet.
No, I like Muffets.
I know. I'm asking, like, what's the difference then between a Weetabix and
a
Muffet?
A Muffet is like a, it's like strands of
razor sharp wire.
Razor sharp.
It's like if you like
razor
steel
sharp
wool,
oat wire.
Yeah, steel wool. Mm-hmm. You want to eat that in the breakfast in the morning.
Once again,
that's a Muffet.
I recommend if you're going to eat cereal that you have it with milk.
Okay.
Which is a softener.
I don't like milk on cereal.
Okay, I do like milk on cereal.
And most people do.
Okay. You're alone in your your strange judgments.
Anytime when you got like, here's your food. Oh, what comes with it? The softener.
Yeah.
Then I probably shouldn't eat that food.
Well, not Weetabix.
It requires a softener.
Because here's the thing. Weetabix. Okay, so.
You put a little Downy on that. Get it nice and soft.
Weetabix looks like particle board. It looks like someone's like cut up some particle board in the shape of soap.
Okay.
And put it into a plastic bag and are selling it to you as cereal. So you put it in your bowl.
Okay. So far, so good.
You pour some milk on it.
All right. I love it
milk
so far.
Milk covers it up.
Yeah, as it does.
You go away for 1 second to get a spoon.
Oh, I don't do that.
Turn back around.
Okay.
The milk is gone. It has been sucked up into this particle board soap-shaped thing.
Right.
And it's gone. It's gone. But it's not even gone in like a pleasant way.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, I'll dig into this. And now it's like a soft pulpy thing, and you put it in your mouth, and it's... There's nothing to it.
Now, sorry to interrupt you, Dave, but as you know, the rules of the show are if we hear a siren, our audience gets to guess whether or not it's an ambulance, a fire truck,
please.
Or the police, or a hazmat.
Whenever you hear a siren, you can interrupt me.
Okay, and let's see what it is, everybody.
Ooh,
what was it? Guess? I didn't see it.
Did you guess ambulance? If you guessed ambulance, you're right.
Have a Muffet.
Have a bowl of Muffets.
Okay, so here's what you're saying. Let's run this scenario by you. So you're saying you put your put your Weetabix in the bowl.
Yeah.
You poured your milk on it.
Yeah.
You left for an hour.
I didn't leave for an hour.
You come
for
back. How long
second.
Was it? How much time?
This is a second.
Oh, because you're Quicksilver. You're just a second to the thing back.
Yeah, well, listen. How far away are
spoons? 10 seconds. Realistically, 10
Realistically,
seconds.
10 seconds. Okay.
10 seconds. So
that's
you
not
go
that
up,
long. That's not that long.
You check your email. You come back.
I did not check my email.
Okay, so you come back and there's no milk in the bowl. Now, Dave, you've got a cat.
No.
The cat didn't drink the milk?
No.
You sure?
Yeah, possible.
That's what cats do.
Our cat is an outdoor cat, so she's not...
Okay.
She's not eating the...
Do you have dogs?
I do have dogs, but...
Dogs drank the milk?
Nope. They're not allowed in the kitchen, and they know it.
Are they? Because as past stories have
Yes. One of them is a little bit of an obnoxious jerk about it, but
all right.
He knows.
So
he doesn't bother coming
and
around.
And now you're
in
digging into your Weetabix.
Yeah. I'm
nice and full of milk.
Oh,
so full
so
of nutrients
terrible.
And vitamin D.
So you have to add more milk to it to make it at least halfway edible. Because it's just like
hasn't your softening agent worked?
It's just dry.
How's it still dry? It
but
absorbed
no,
all the milk.
I mean, you know, it's like... it's like you just put like a wad of wood pulp in your mouth that's wet and you're just chewing it. You could chew for a year and you wouldn't be
go
happy
play some
swallowing.
Baseball, have a little chaw between the cheek and gum.
You ever eaten something where you don't want to swallow it and you just keep chewing? And
have
it
we ever, huh? Everybody out there? Are we my right? What? No, I don't know. What? What are we talking about?
Sounded sexy.
What? Weetabix?
Yeah. You've never done that? Like you've eaten something and you're just like, you start chewing it and you're just like, I don't want to swallow it.
Yeah.
But I can't spit it out.
Why can't you? You're at home.
No, I don't know.
Go get spit it out.
So what I've learned to do...
spit it out. You're at home.
I add blueberries to it.
Okay.
The blueberries are good.
Yeah.
Weetabix is terrible. When I'm finished the blueberries, everything else goes into the garbage can. And this way, I'm working through the box, and eventually I can get some actual cereal I like. But here's the thing. Speaking of Raisin Bran, my wife also bought me... It was called like Ultimate Raisin Bran or something like that.
It was the last box of Raisin Bran you'll ever have. That's what ultimate means.
Yes.
So you'll never have Raisin Bran
I
after that
I can.
Box.
It might have been Maximum. I don't know. It was some
Maximum Raisin
it
Bran.
It was some kind of...
Is it Maximum Raisins or Maximum Bran?
I don't know.
Very different
well,
scenarios
it was,
there.
Here's the thing. I learned eating this stuff, which was like the house brand, right? Like Compliments, which is this new Safeway brand.
Right. It's the Mom Are We Poor brand.
Well, I guess. But here's the thing.
Nothing wrong with that.
Here's the thing. Here's what I learned. 2 scoops of raisins in Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
Never say how big the scoops are.
That is enough raisins.
Oh, is it
you don't need
raisins?
You don't need another scoop of raisins.
Huh.
That's what I because this stuff It was like I was eating raisins. It should have been called bran raisin because there was less bran than there were raisins.
Well, I'm going to, folks.
And I don't usually complain about food, as everyone knows who's listened to this show.
Again, we've had some complaints of people who listen to the show in the car with their daughters.
Yeah.
And like for us to keep the racy language down.
Mm-hmm.
And racy scenarios.
That's right.
And
that's what we're talking. Those fucking raisin bran.
That's right. So I'm glad that we're talking about something like breakfast cereals right now. Good mm-hmm. for us.
Yeah.
This might expand our market. When I was a kid, and again, when
what is it about breakfast cereal?
Boop, beep, boo. When I was a kid, we bought raisin bran.
What was that? Boop, boop, boo.
I was just making funny noises. So when I was a kid, we bought raisin bran.
Yeah.
Kellogg's raisin bran. Or maybe it was Post. I don't know. One of the raisin brands.
Sure.
Those are your two big
brands. One of the raisin brand brands.
Brand, that's right.
Yeah.
They had brand recognition. So we got it. And I guess, I don't know what happened in shipping and handling, but we went like, it's just brand flakes.
Oh.
What's this? It's just brand. Well, wait, I'm gonna play out this scenario. So we all got brand. We all brand. We're going to eat it. And like my parents were like, you're going to eat it, but it's just brand.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. Can we just put our own raisins on it? No. So we ate in bran, mm-hmm. and then we finally get to the bottom of the box. It's full of raisins at the bottom. They'd all fallen to the very bottom.
Wow.
And yeah, they'd
worked their way down.
There wasn't enough whatever it was to keep raisins mixed in evenly.
That's right.
Maybe it was some coating or something. But it was a dream eating all those raisins at the bottom of the box. Delicious.
Really?
So good. Yeah.
You sure?
Oh, really good. Yeah, nice and bran-y.
But you don't like it with milk, though.
So. No, it's gross. Cereal with milk is disgusting. I'm not the fabric softener bear. I don't need to soften my food.
Yeah, wow. Talk about an outlier.
This is a great burger. Can I get a softening agent on this burger before I eat it? Thanks. Yeah,
you do. You do have a softening agent on that
which
burger.
Which is?
Mayonnaise, mustard, those kind of things.
I don't think people...
That's what makes it palatable to
I don't
eat
think people
a hunk of meat.
Put ketchup on their burger to soften it.
Yeah, they do.
They put it on to flavor it. They don't
blow.
Know. That's not the point at all.
But isn't milk a flavor additive?
It is. It sweetens it a bit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Case closed.
It adds even more sugar to your sugar.
This thing is totally unrelated to this week's show, but because it's still in my mind, I'm going to go to that lawyer supply shop, get a gavel, come back here and bang it on the desk. Case closed.
Okay.
Still in my mind.
So we went to a diner. Now
are we still talking about that?
No, we're talking about our favorite dragons. Let's go right back to the very first episode and finish that conversation.
All right. So we went to this diner.
All right.
Are you going to name the diner?
The diner used to be called Reno's, and it was a local
Reno's.
Diner.
Yeah.
And
if you went there too often, you had Reno failure.
Anyone here who actually has that, we're so sorry. It was like a local greasy spoon.
Yes.
It was like, you know, it was a mix of like Chinese food and just diner fare.
Yeah.
And, you know, burgers were $3 and
perfectly
you know,
fair. Yeah. For the quality of it, that's a
yeah,
fair
that's
price.
Right. It wasn't super high quality,
no,
but it
was
wasn't, you know, the fries were okay. The burgers were all right. You know, it's just, it's that.
When you tasted the patty, you said,
I didn't mind it myself.
Okay.
But, you know, and then the Chinese food was made quite well, and then you could get, you know, refills on coffee.
Okay. Sure.
Basically, it was a place.
Was it a chain Reno's, or was that just the only Reno's?
It was the only Reno's.
Because it seemed like a Beano's or a Dino's or whatever, those kind of restaurants.
It had been there about 40 years.
Oh.
And, you know, it seen a lot and been a lot. And it was kind of the place where, you know, you'd find a lot of older people would gather there throughout the day.
People
and
getting divorced would go there.
Sure.
Stay a week.
Why not?
Yeah,
a little bit of that. And then young people and whatever. And basically it was like, if you didn't have a lot of dough, you go there, have a coffee burger, whatever.
Sure, sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
So because it's Vancouver now, that cannot exist anymore.
No. We don't want garbage. We only want good stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
The cornflakes on a milkshake.
That's right. Well, and here's the other thing. It's like the staff were the sweetest. Like,
Very nice people.
And they would just treat everyone really well, and they wouldn't treat people... It's just hard to say. It sounds like something you should do is treat people well.
Yeah.
But they would treat people very respectfully, and no one.
And they're very friendly. Like
yeah,
yeah. It
and
kind of felt like you were in their house almost.
That's right. Yeah, it felt like that. So, so they got the boot because you know some restaurateurs went. Oh, I like to get that space, and they talked to the landlord and said, "I'll give you this for that." And the landlord went, "I like money," and they said,
"Is that what happened? Really?
Yeah." And
why were we anyway?
Okay. What's that?
Well, why were we giving them our business?
Well,
okay.
So they couldn't match that, and so they're going out and this and
it's too bad.
And that's sad. And I bought a couple of things from them, you know, before they lent. I've got like the last kind of special signs here and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they were online. There was a couple of news things about them opening in this, and it was all about, you know, how this is going to make the neighborhood better, and they were kind of bad mouthing Reno's a little bit as like, you know, this greasy spoon that, you know, was kind of disgusting and this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, well, no. And so like, I was countering some things that were being said. I was like, you know, this is the kind of place the community gathers.
Yeah.
And whatever you do, you know, next, it will not be a place where the community gathers. And I understand, you know, you're doing your thing and you're inevitable. This is going to happen. If it wasn't you, it was going to be someone else.
Yeah.
I'm not living under illusions. I know that the building I'm in right now is going to be bought out at some point, and this is going to be condos. There's no way, because this is money, and it's lying on the ground, and people are going to take the fucking money.
Yeah.
But don't badmouth the restaurant that was there, because it did what it did well for what it was.
Yeah.
And they were, and so we kind of got into a back and forth about that, and I was saying like, they were telling me about the charity work that they do, and I was saying, okay, this is my big problem, is like, you're treating the people who are there as charity, not as customers. And they're not charity. They're just, they just want to be respected. They want to have a place to go and have like an inexpensive meal and hang out with their friends. They're not a charity thing. And by comparing them to that, nothing against charity, but it's a very different thing than a place in your community where you feel you belong and you're there. So they kind of agreed with me. And I was saying like, you know, as long as you're selling a burger, which like you do at your other restaurant, for $14 when burgers are normally $3, you know, it's not going to be a place where the community is going to be able to gather.
Yeah.
So what they did was said, nope, fair enough. We're going to put two items on the menu, and they put on a breakfast special that's fairly reasonably priced, and they put on the Reno's burger, which was kind of a tribute to Reno's. I went, okay. Because they were doing that, that's why I went. I wanted to go and see what it was like.
Okay.
And because they did that kind of reach out, and, you know, the Reno's burger is a $7 burger. It's not $3, but they were saying that if you have that burger and a cup of coffee, that comes in under $10, which still is cheaper than a White Spot or other, comparable restaurant in the area. I went, okay, fair enough. They're trying their bit. So that's why I went to see how it was.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Now, what did you think of the restaurant when you were there?
Well, I mean, it's your typical modern restaurant. It's very well appointed. It's full of, you know, they've obviously tried to give it that sort of very modern diner look.
Yeah, the booths are similar in shape, but everything is now beige.
Or beige or white and with a green. It's this very modern
look. All the staff are young and attractive now. They are not older people by any stretch of the imagination, but that's what they are. That's what wait staff are now.
Yeah, that's true enough. They're not like Earl's level, you know.
No, they're very...
sort of unfairly, you know.
Yeah, they're not making people dress like models in black outfits.
Yeah,
but they've all got very cool haircuts, very modern looks.
It's very hipster, yes.
Very, yeah, I don't want to say hipster, but that's basically what it is. Fair enough.
Okay.
They sit you down at the table.
Bathroom was nice.
Was the bathroom nice? Yeah, because the bathroom at the other place was not that great.
No.
I will give you that.
Yes.
And so the place is called Fable.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of an interesting name. I like Fable. You know, there's something, you know, that's, you know, telling a story, maybe thing has a story. And they sit us down and they go like, oh, do you know why we're called Fable? It's like, oh, no, because we're farm to table. And I was like, that's probably the least interesting reason you could ever call yourself Fable.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many more interesting. No. Mm-hmm. There it is. So everything is organic and fed by, love and all these things. That's good. It's all nice and good. And that's all fine.
The burger I had was, you know, it was fine. It was good. I mean, it wasn't great. It was good.
Yeah. It's a comparable, maybe it's a little bit more expensive than a White Spot burger.
Mm-hmm. It was more expensive.
It was more expensive than a White Spot burger, but it's comparable in price to, it's actually cheaper than a Cactus Club burger.
And I think it was better than a Cactus Club burger.
Okay. So you got that. And I had the Reno's burger, which is an infinite amount of pickles. and kind of a Thousand Island dressing.
Okay.
One patty. Yours had two patties.
I had two patties.
Mine was like $7. And my burger, I gotta say, was fine. It was all right. Mm-hmm. But
so I like pickles on a burger, so an infinite amount sounds good to me.
Yeah. So that was fine. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's a new restaurant, so you know, the staff left us for a long period of time. Like a very long period of time.
Man.
We had a lot of people just wandering around.
Yes.
And it wasn't like the restaurant was full, but yeah. There's a lot of people just like looking busy, but seemed to be doing not much.
Not much.
And,
certainly not bringing a bill.
Nope. Not bringing the bill. I ordered a corn on the cob, which, came. Okay. Now I understand there's a lot of ways to go with corn on the cob.
There's only one way, really.
Okay. There's the regular way, which is butter,
boiled in water.
Boiled in water for 4 minutes, a little bit of butter, a little bit of salt.
Yeah.
Or
no salt, just butter.
That's incorrect.
Butter is already salted. You don't need to add more butter or more salt to your butter on your corn on the cob.
Sure.
You just need the butter to soften that corn.
Yep.
And make it nice and so good.
And I've had Mexican corn, which has lime.
Okay.
I've had like other kinds of corns where you have a little mayo.
Okay.
I've had corn where you have a little bit, it seems like ketchup. I've had those kind of things. What they decided to do was everything, all those things on the corn. Like, it looked like a banana split.
Yeah.
So much stuff on top of it. And it just made me kind of go, why do you hate corn? You know, corn's good. You don't need to do all this business.
Mm-hmm.
And then when...
That's why all you need is butter on it.
Right. And I was like, I'm not the kind of guy to say anything about stuff.
No.
Except on my podcast later when I'm going to like talk about it. Because I got this format. I can talk to literally dozens of people
now. That's right. It's called grist for the mill.
Right. So the server, she comes and she's asking, how's your meal? And I'm going to answer honestly, which is to say, the burger is great. Which it was. The burger was quite great.
Yeah.
And you would say, my burger's really good. And then she, I guess, picked up on that and went, how's the corn? And I went, you know, it's got a lot going on. It's a lot of business. And she had not tasted it. And in the middle, there's a lot of things happening there. I haven't tried that. Yeah, it's, you know, it was interesting to experiment. You try things. Mm. And there you go. And now here's what you do when you're a new restaurant, by the way.
Yeah.
And I'm not fishing for deals. But like, I know that when you're a new restaurant and you're trying stuff and you got your stuff and someone goes, yeah, that really wasn't for me. Take that off the bill. Because you got to build your customer base. That's what you want to do.
Okay.
You know, no, I was still on the bill. It was like, you know, there you go. Just a small little thing. And there's like a lot of little small things. And it just felt like, you know, okay, so this is how this is now. And there's a lot of smug in this room. And
yeah. Okay. Here's two things I didn't like.
Okay.
One is
company.
Yes. Company. Ugh. No, it was the.
I kept doing knock knock jokes for the entire thing.
So interrupting cow is the worst. After 15 minutes of it, boo, not moo, boo. No, it was the fact that they didn't have soft drinks on their drinks menu. Like there's no, like I was supposed to ask for it. I feel awkward saying, do you guys sell Coke or anything?
Yeah, because you know they're going to say, no. So I ordered a lemonade and it was one of these where they make their own lemonade and they pour it over soda and they make a whole bunch of things and it just burns your everything. And you're like, all right, okay, I get it. You know, you're made Drano. Point made restaurant.
Yeah.
Point made. I get it. It's fine.
And the other thing is, they're a diner. They're a diner.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have a hamburger,
yeah, as you do,
with some French fries,
yeah,
bring over the ketchup. Bring some ketchup. Don't give me a tiny, shallow, little metal dish with
the idea of ketchup.
With the idea of ketchup.
With the word ketchup written on the bottom.
That'll be like a third of my way through the fries and it's gone.
Yeah, it's one of those places where I'm sure they get good reviews for the food and whatever, and it's farm to table. I also want to say, when someone says that, like, yeah, our thing is farm to table, I'm going to be eating fork to mouth. So just letting you know how that's going to go down. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go from my wallet to the bill. That's how I'm going to be paying that afterwards. So let's all just knock this bullshit off and just, you know. Does it taste good? Great. And don't punch an animal and hurt it.
That's right.
But, you know.
I'm mum. Mouth to bum.
It's a shame you didn't say that.
I just thought of it now.
Yeah, it just felt like you're in there. And again, it's new, so maybe they're finding their way around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, definitely comfort is not their goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's attitude.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's like presentation.
Yeah.
And the idea of food. And it's a shame because, you know, they're calling themselves a diner, but the last thing was a diner.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not a high-end diner, and maybe it's a little too greasy, and maybe you really got to work your way around and figure out what to order, and there's problems. But, you know, never saw a mouse.
I just want to point that out.
Well, it was clean. Like, it wasn't situation. No,
it was like the bathroom was not well appointed.
Nope. But the bathroom, you pays your money, you takes your chances.
You wash your hands.
That's right.
And don't hit the doorknob on your way out.
Just that's
use
right.
Use your elbow to look at it.
Yeah, make sure the guy from Train Spotting isn't swimming in the toilet trying to get his stuff.
But
no, it felt like, you know, it doesn't feel like something real. It feels like something that's appropriating something else. And, you know, it's got things like, you know, it's like traditional diner food. And it's like, but it's not.
No, there's no, yeah.
It's not, though. Yeah. It's just you're making believe. You're pretending. You're a fable. You're telling a story. That's really what you are. You are a fable.
Yeah.
You're a story.
Yeah.
And the story can make people comforted. You know, it's like, I'm eating a burger, but what's that? Farm to table? So I don't have to feel guilty about eating a cow? Oh, well, then I feel good about that. No, still, you can still feel as guilty as you want to or not. It's either way. You're still eating the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's what it is. And there you are. And yeah. So I wanted to go there with you and see what you thought. But I also had heard good stuff about the burger. So I wanted you to have a burger that perhaps.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, you know, for what it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that they're like going to win any awards for
it was
for
not my burger was not a million miles away from Lucy's Diner up the street.
Okay.
I'm thinking about it.
I like their burgers.
Yeah, it was very similar actually. Mm-hmm. in the way it was put together. But hey folks, when you come to Vancouver, try it out for yourself, see what you think.
Yes or not.
Yeah, I probably won't be going there again.
You probably will.
Yeah, I don't know,
it's pretty close.
It's close, but something probably has to change. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see what goes
your
on.
Attitude.
Yeah, a little bit of that. I do miss the old group. You know, I got a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you name a burger after the restaurant that I liked and the people that I liked. Though they named it fucking wrong. This is the other thing.
Okay.
They called it the Reno Burger.
Mm.
Should be called the Reno's Burger.
Yeah.
Because the restaurant was called Reno's.
Yeah.
Throw a little...
Yeah, because you don't know. Is it named after the town?
Yeah.
Or is it named after the old restaurant?
Yeah. That would be clear. The nice thing to do. Yeah, it's like fix that up with your new menus.
Please do.
All right. Back over to you, Dave. You seem to have a book of
I want to talk about something else.
Why don't you talk about something else? Dave, make the show your own. Do what you want.
It is.
Let's have a chin wag. That's why we do this. We sit down to have a talk and just clear the air.
Did I start the show? I did, didn't I? Wow.
Yeah.
Good. We remembered that. No, I was going to say, I was going to talk a little bit about going to the movies. First, I'll tell a disappointing story. The other day, my oldest daughter, Mary, decided, since she was home from her job on the island, that she wanted to go see a movie. She wanted to go see The Nice Guys, which is a good movie.
Yep.
I've already seen it.
Shane Black.
Shane directed. Black, yep. Ryan Gosling, Cameron Crowe. No, Russell Crowe.
Counting Crows.
Counting
Cheryl
Crows.
Crow.
All of them.
The Black Crows.
So many crows in that movie. It's a murder of crows. In fact, the movie was about a murder. Interesting. What a coincidence.
Crows.
I like the fact that, should we mention that we're still doing this two a night show, so there's going to be these weird overlaps from episode to episode
now? We'll be doing throwbacks to last week's show.
Because we just talked about it an hour ago.
Yep.
But anyway.
And be out of touch with modern events.
So so the only place in town that it's playing is the Fifth Avenue Cinemas here.
I can see the problems that might be coming.
Yeah. So I had to go pick up my... youngest daughter Eve, because she is going to Rally this year with Pony Club.
Okay.
Rally is a 3-day event that is pretty
it's
much
like the Purge.
It is like the Purge. That's right. Only it involves young girls wearing pajama bottoms and all their hair is an updos because it's the second day and it's hard to get to the showers every day.
You sold it in the room.
There's no boys around. There's no boys around. So yeah, they're just dressed. They're dressed down. Dress down. I'll just put it that way.
Dressage.
Yes.
Okay.
So she had a meeting, which is called Trot Up, because it's Rally. So everything has to have a great name.
Yeah.
I love Rally.
Wait a second. Is this our dollop of Trot Up?
The dollop of Trot Up. Yes, that's right.
Is that a segment that we're doing this week?
Sure. You know, at Rally, when they have hot chocolate in the evening?
Yeah.
It's called Mug Up. I love it. I just love it so much. I don't know why. Because Rally, it's an interesting thing. Like, the kids run it, basically. I mean, there's adults there. But the adults cannot interfere in any part of the competition. They can't saddle the horses. Mm-hmm. They can't clean the tack room. They can't clean up. You know, they can't do anything.
They're like time travelers.
They're not there.
They can't affect things.
They can't affect things. That's right.
Step on a butterfly, they can't do any of it.
Yep, can't have the butterfly effect. There's adult judges who go around and mark the kids for how clean, how well they've cleaned up the stalls and how the horses are fed and how the tack room is cleaned up and stuff like that. But the bossy mom and dads cannot stick their noses in and make a big fuss about this stuff. They are forbidden to go to those areas. Which is great, right? Because it's just the kids doing it. So it's fantastic. I just love it. I love everything about it. They get to camp for 3 days. This year, most likely in the rain because of the way our weather's been going. By the way, loving the weather that we've had so far for July. All rain. It's making me so happy because I'm just imagining all these jerks who just came here like in the last year or so. And they're just like, oh, this weather's so awful. I can't stand it. I'm just like, then you're in the wrong place.
Yep.
Because we live in a rainforest, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, last year it was a drought. Yeah. That's the only thing I can think of.
That was terrible.
We were just like, ugh.
That was the scariest year.
Terrible and bad. And we're all scared and we're like praying for rain. It's like, we're getting rain this year. Great.
This is awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Loving it. But anyway, so they camp for 3 days. There's a swimming hole they go swimming in. Of course, they do their, it's a 3-day event. So they do their dressage. They do their cross country and they do their stadium jumping. That's the final part of the thing. And they're teams. And so the teams are, their marks are all grouped together. So they win or lose as a team.
Okay.
And so you have 4 riders. You have a team captain who doesn't ride. And then you have 2 grooms. And so that makes up your team. And so each pony club has their, or sometimes you'll have combined teams. And so, yeah, it's just great. I just love it so much. But anyway, so she was going to this meeting for Trot Up. And so I picked her up. I'm driving back and I just mentioned that Mary and I were going to see this movie. And he was like, oh, can I come?
Oh.
And I was like, well, you've already seen it. And she's like, oh, I'd love to come. So I was like, okay, you can come too. So we got some gas, got home, picked up Mary, got in the car. We're driving down there and we just were passing the exit to the movie theater we often go to, the Colossus in Langley. And he was like, oh, we got to turn off here. And I'm like, oh no, we're going on the Fifth Avenue. And as soon as I said that, I started thinking, she went, you mean the movie theater I can't go to? And I was like, oh, fudge. Because the kids were in the car.
Yeah.
I can only say fudge. No, not really. That's why they first heard swearing, because they drove with their dad. But anyway, so we had to go down to another exit, turn back around, and just drive back home again. And I felt pretty bad for Mary. Because, you know, she wanted to see the...
Yeah.
But the thing is the other day we went and saw a documentary about Brian De Palma called De Palma at the Van City Theaters. Those are also licensed, and kids, people under 19 can't go. But... don't tell anyone this. If you give your youngest daughter her older sister's driver's license, she can get in. But don't tell anyone. Strictly a secret. Shh. But anyway, we saw De Palma.
Yeah.
Really good movie. It's directed by...
And your young daughter got really drunk because she had the fake ID.
She was wasted.
Just pounding back the Boilermakers.
If I can just apologize to the man in front of us that she threw up on. Just a little bit on his shoulder.
Right.
Not all over him, but just a little... caught him. Once again, sir, I apologize.
Yep.
As I said, send me the bill.
No, what she said was like, send me the bill. My name's Mary. Look at my ID. This is my ID. You can see me on the island. Hey, you want to fight? Come fight me on the island. I'm there. I'll show you where I work.
It's true.
Yep.
It was very convincing. But it's directed by Noah Baumbach and another person whose name I don't know. Jake Paltrow. Does that sound right, everybody?
That sounds like the name of somebody.
It does.
Yep.
But Noah Baumbach, you know him, right? Yep. Like he wrote The Aquatic Life of Steve Zissou with Wes Anderson.
One of my favorite movies, yeah.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. And he did a film I love a lot, Francis Ha. And a film I...
haven't seen that.
You haven't seen Francis Ha?
Nope.
It's the prequel to Banshee. You got to see it.
I need to interrupt you right now to tell you a quick story.
Sure.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
This is Ian with just a very quick story of what the hell...
What?
This is the story of
okay.
What the hell? That's okay. The segment that we're doing right now is what the hell?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a nephew who just turned 14 years old.
14 years old.
All right. Love him very much. I've got a niece. She is 10 years old. She love her to death. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic people.
Yeah.
So anyway, try to tell the story as quickly as possible. We're at the house that they live in with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Something gets brought up. where he decides to Google me and has never Googled me before. And okay. There's all these images of me. He's like, why are you all over the internet?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I do all these things. I didn't know that. How did you not know that you're 14? How do you not know?
Yeah.
Weird. And I said, like, you know, your aunt, Pia, she's also all over there. In fact, let me show you a clip. And I was like, I got him a clip and I thought this clip will impress him. And it's the clip of, Samuel L. Jackson giving Pia her Eisner Award. I'm okay. Like, oh, he'll like this being of that age. And he's like, oh, I don't know who that is. I'm like, oh, well, you just don't think you don't know who that is. It's Samuel L. Jackson. You know, the actor Samuel L. Jackson? No. Oh, okay. So we start listing movies that Samuel L. Jackson is in.
Yeah.
And we come to realize that both him and my niece have never seen a movie that Samuel L. Jackson is in.
They've not even seen like Avengers movies or Spider-Man or anything?
No.
Iron Man?
Let's keep going. He has never seen... Yeah.
No. I mean, he's in a lot of movies that you wouldn't want kids who are 10 years old to see.
Oh, I'm not expecting you saw Black Snake Moan, you know? All right. I don't expect that or...
No, but even like Pulp Fiction is not a film that's suitable for... No,
but you would think any of the Marvel movies, right?
Yeah, that's...
Nope. He's never seen a Marvel movie. Okay, so let's work our way.
Are culturally starving.
Let's work our way down.
Yeah.
Have you never seen? Because I'm thinking, oh, I know a deep. Here, it's this is an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Park. Never seen Jurassic Park.
He's not in Jurassic Park.
Yes, he is.
Really?
He's in the first Jurassic Park movie. He's in Jurassic Park.
What's he doing though? What's he doing?
He's like a scientist guy in Jurassic Park. He's one of the guys. He's.
Can I just say I saw it once?
That's fine. Okay. Yeah, it's one more time than my niece and nephew have seen it. So I was like, wait, I've got it. The Star Wars prequels.
Oh,
he's seen the Star Wars. He loves...
What
he
kids must haven't? Love...
Nope. He's never seen any of them. He's seen two Star Wars movies. He's seen Star Wars.
Good.
Reluctantly. Maybe bits of it. And they went to see The Force Awakens in the theater.
Okay.
Not knowing really what Star Wars was.
Yeah.
So enjoy that one. Okay. So no. And I'm like, oh, man. There's got to be some... Got it. Yeah. I've got it.
Yeah.
He's seen this one. I will bet the bank.
Pete's Dragon.
That which version? The new one? I don't think
Pete's
he's in that.
Dragon on the plane.
No. The Incredibles.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way he hasn't seen that. Never seen The Incredibles. He's never seen The Incredibles. He hasn't
Where's
seen,
my uniform?
He hasn't seen any He hasn't seen any movie that Samuel L. Jackson has been in.
Yeah.
To which I said to his mother, how is this possible?
Yeah. And I hope you said it like, how did this happen? Like trying to do a sort of Samuel Jackson sort of thing.
That's right. I've had enough of these motherfucking references going over his motherfucking head. So yeah, I was like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
So we're having a movie night.
Oh,
next.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got to
figure Pulp Fiction?
Out. Yeah, that's right. What's the latest Quentin Tarantino one?
The
Lousy Nine.
The Serendipitous Six. Come
that,
on.
That dickish
the hateful, 10. Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. Yeah, we'll watch a little Hateful Eight. Amazing. One, yeah.
Jackie Brown.
Amazing. Like,
Jackie
I
Brown.
Understand,
he's really good in Jackie Brown.
I understand that my niece and nephew are sports related. I get that. Yeah. Like they're more sports minded.
Yeah.
But how do you not stumble bum across?
Not, they don't care.
I mean, here's what I think actually he must have seen, because I know he's played a lot of the Star Wars games.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking the only Samuel L. Jackson he's ever seen is in Lego form.
Okay. Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Amazing to me. Hmm. Amazing. Shocking. Not shocking to other family members of mine. Like, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? He's never seen one Marvel movie. I mean, I swear we have given them at least two Marvel movies. Like, I know we've given like the Avengers as a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Just
weird.
Just put it on.
They just put it on. They hit it.
Just put it on.
They hit it. They put it away.
Back to your story.
That's a bad influence.
Back to
you and
story.
Your Avengers movie. And they'll want shawarma.
Yeah, what I think I'm going to do, though, is I'm not going to give them a Samuel Jackson this time. Since they haven't seen any Marvel movies, I'm thinking the one that might be a good starter is Guardians of the Galaxy, because like, they like animals.
What about Ant-Man?
Well, Ant-Man starts in the 50s, and it starts with S.H.I.E.L.D., and it starts with all this other stuff, and it starts, and then it goes to prison.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the only problem I have with Guardians of the Galaxy is it starts sad, but they're, and I'd say, and then there's a bit of me that's like, but they see Pixar movies. They haven't! God damn it!
You should start with The Incredibles. That's what you should start with.
You know what? I think he actually might consider himself too cool to see that now that he's 14, see a cartoon, possibly.
That's
but I think like Guardians of the Galaxy has enough, you know, shoot 'em up, but it's also safe, but dancing. But then I think Rocket will get my niece. I think that and the talking tree. I think they'll like that. We'll see.
Okay.
Anyway, back to your...
I went and saw this movie. Like I say, it was directed by... It was interesting because, you know, Noah Baumbach is a filmmaker who I like a lot. Like I said, Francis Ha, which I'm I'm surprised you haven't seen it. I think it's on Netflix.
Okay.
And so is Mistress America, another film. The two films that he did with his, I don't know if they're girls married, but I know that they are an item, Greta Gerwig.
Well, Greta Gerwig. Well, good for that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Nice work if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're talking about, but still, it's nice.
You know who Greta Gerwig is?
Oh, girls. I don't know. What's she in?
Greenberg? See Greenberg?
Oh, yeah, I did see Greenberg.
Well, she's the girlfriend.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right, like that.
Yeah, that's also a Noah Baumbach film.
Oh, wow, nice. All right. I'm going to keep being creepy.
Yeah, you are being creepy. Yeah. So anyway, it was interesting, though. It's only Brian De Palma. There's no one else in the film. They don't.
Oh, is that right?
They don't have anybody else in the movie at all. Like,
just have him talking about his movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then showing clips of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. Clips. That'd be weird if they didn't show clips.
Yeah, that would be really awkward.
And then he acts out scenes.
I don't know if that would be weird. It would be interesting. It has clips from other films as well, because it's interesting, his take on other films and things. Because some of the things he said were really quite interesting. And I was surprised, apparently it came from a fairly well-off family. His dad was an orthopedic surgeon. And so he went to Columbia University planning to go into medicine. And then he saw Vertigo in 1958 and absolutely fell in love with the idea of film.
Hmm.
And he feels, and it's talking about Vertigo, he describes it as a film about making a film. It's about creating illusion. You know, in Vertigo, it's about creating illusions. And it's interesting that that's what he takes from the film. And that's and how much of an impact it had. I think if there's any director or people like to maybe over the top, but, or too often mention his debt to Hitchcock, which he doesn't deny. He says, why would we just want it to end with him? Like, there, it's a great film language that you want to carry on, you know. But, so he was going to Columbia. So then he went to Sarah Lawrence, I guess, which had a film program. And started acting and doing plays and stuff there, and met William Finley, the actor who was in a lot of his films, played the Phantom and Phantom of the Paradise. And then it was interesting. Like met Robert De Niro there at Sarah Lawrence, and an actress whose name has now got out of my head. One was Jennifer Salt, but I don't know if she's done very much. Another one was much better known, and I don't know why I can't remember her. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But yeah, just, kind of started his little kind of group of actors that he used, like Hi Mom and Greetings, of course, were his first two kind of major films, or semi-major films. Both of them had Robert De Niro in them and other actors. And it was really interesting, like, hearing him talk about filmmaking. And I was surprised at, like, the timeline of films as well, because, for instance, Phantom of the Paradise, well, I've always assumed that came after Carrie, that, he had clout after Carrie. And he's like, well, now that I've got all this clout, I'm going to make a crazy music opera that's the sort of over the top, Phantom of the Opera parody, you know. No, he did that before Carrie. So, he did that after.
And again, I haven't seen Phantom of the Paradise either.
Oh, I love that movie. But so it's interesting. He did Hi Mom and then Greetings. And then he did this film called Know Your Rabbit or something. It was this Tom Smothers movie. Like, after Tom Smothers left the Smothers Brothers show, after that show was canceled, he put together this film, which is basically about this ad executive who becomes disillusioned and kind of drops out of society.
Now, is Tom the one who looks like Johnny Carson, or the one who doesn't?
He's the one, the kind of blonde-haired guy.
Is he the dumb one or the smart one?
He's the dumb one. Did the yo-yo, gotcha. Yo-yo man and stuff like that.
Not dumb in real life. His character was dumb.
His character was dumb. That's right. He played dumb. Just like me on this show. So then, am I playing? Nobody knows.
Especially you.
That is a problem for me. You're right. And so he's doing this film, which I've never seen. Because what happened
I wish I had a guitar and I could have just gone into Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley. And then we could really do a Smothers Brothers thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Just trying to play a little song. keep going.
I do like the Smothers Brothers a lot.
Me too.
So then, but partway through the filming, I guess Tom Smothers became disillusioned with the actual film, and he like disappeared for a while, and then he came back.
Temper.
Is that right?
Oh yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah,
but interesting.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons the show got canceled.
Oh,
it was like, oh, it's got too political. And I went, yeah. Also, some people were kind of jerks.
Oh, okay.
A little bit, little hot tempered guy. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, interesting. It works. That's funny, isn't it? Because he's played such a dumb, like easygoing guy.
Yep.
But in reality, the one who seems like the sharp tongue person is the easygoing person. Curious. Tom and Dick. Dick is the mustachioed brother.
Right.
Who played the bass. the big sound of bass. Anyway.
Down your head, dum doo. They didn't sing that song, but that's
I think they did.
Did they?
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're really funny. We'll put a clip, because there's probably lots of listeners out there who are like, who the fuck are the Smothers Brothers?
Yep. And they had a good TV show. And
yeah, then, Steve Martin was on it.
Then they brought, and David Letterman. Did David Letterman work on it? No, not David Letterman. No. Sorry about that. Bob Einstein was on it.
Later, yeah. Super Dave, yeah.
And Pat Paulson was on it.
Pat Paulson, yes, ran his presidential campaign as part of the show.
And then many years later, they brought the exact same show back on the air. And I think I canceled in 3 episodes, not because it was too political, but because it didn't work no more.
Yeah, it's of its time. It's kind of like watching Laugh-In now. You're like, this should be called Laugh Out. Anyway, so he was working this film, and apparently...
What a burn.
I showed it. They can take their millions and leave. George Schlatter.
Sock it to me?
So...
That's your bibby.
You sock me? I sock you. Yeah, so it was interesting because... It reached the end of the filming, and like it wasn't very good.
Yep.
And
that's a drag.
And then
that must be such a drag.
And then Brian De Palma said, "Well, I need to do reshoots. Like, we need to reshoot this film." And they're like, "No." And he's like, "No, we got it. It's either my way or the highway." And they said, "Okay, highway." So he was fired off the picture, and then he was really depressed. Right? He's like, "Oh,
yeah.
What am I going to do now? My career's over. I've finished. I'm done. Wrap." And then he put together the movie Sisters. I don't know if you've seen that film. It's a great movie.
Okay.
But he even talks about, and what I like about Sisters is it uses a lot of split screen and showing two different things happening simultaneously, and I just love it.
Oh, nice.
But where he got that from is he did this interesting film called Dionysius in 69, it's called. And it was like one of those kind of like hair or whatever, one of those kind of plays where, you know, a lot of nudity on stage and a lot of audience interaction and stuff like that. So you needed to have like show the audience and also the stage. And so what he did was he had, two cameras, one was filming the stage action, one was filming the audience. And then he just split screened it so he could see them simultaneously, so he could see the audience's interaction with what was happening on stage, which was a good idea. And so then he incorporated that into Sisters. And that was pretty big, it did pretty well. So it got him some attention and stuff like that. And then he did Phantom of the Paradise. So I was like, well, this is crazy. Like, what a weird career. Like, Phantom of the Paradise is fun. It's got Paul Williams in it. And he does all these great parodies of like 50s rock and roll, the Beach Boys and stuff like that. And then this kind of weird glam kind of stuff. And it's a lot of fun, that movie, but it was not a success in the States because apparently they didn't take out a particular kind of insurance. I don't know what it's called, but they got sued because they stole the name Phantom of the Opera. They got sued because it's called Swan Records and there was the Led Zeppelin Swan Record label. There was something and a couple other things that caused some problems. And so in the States, it was just like a big, just a flop. Popular in Canada, here in Canada, it's popular. Played for 10 years in France, apparently. But yeah, in the States, it just did not.
Now, my confusion.
Didn't work.
Okay, I got a lawsuit, bit of confusion there.
Sure.
So the Phantom of the Opera, was that an original movie, Phantom of the Opera? Or was that was based on a book,
I think it's
right?
Based on a book, I think so.
How, there's no way that book wasn't in public domain.
But I think when you make a film, then you own the copyright on that.
On the book?
I guess as a film thing. So if someone else makes a film based on Phantom of the Opera or uses that as a reference.
Oh boy.
I think it's a stretch.
That's a huge stretch.
But they were sued for it, apparently.
I understand that. I'm now going to look up when the Phantom of the Opera book was written.
So then he got offered the chance to do Carrie, and he was kind of interested in it. He it's interesting listening to him talk about it because he says he came in at $1.8 million for budget. They said $1.6 million. He said, I can't do it for $1.6 million. It's got to be $1.8 million. He said, nope, $1.6 million. He said, $1.8 million. He said, listen, if I can't do it for $1.8 million, I'm not going to do it. They said, fine. I started moving his furniture to the office. He said, I went home. I thought about it, and I phoned back and said, you know what? I think I can do it for $1.6 million. And the final budget, $1.8 million. But it was interesting. Once again, that movie uses a little bit of split screen.
Yeah.
But he said he tried to use more of it. He says, but it doesn't work for action.
No.
Like in Sisters, it works in scenes where people are doing almost sort of mundane things that kind of reflect on each other.
Don't you think like in the Thomas Crown Affair that it works? Like,
but it's not really action though. It's more like
suspense.
It's more like caper stuff, right? Yeah.
By the way, Phantom of the Opera was written in 1927. the book. So that's very surprising that,
No, it would still have been 70 years would still be within three generations.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So it still would have been in
right. So okay, period. Back to Thomas Crown Affair and back to split screens and action. That's interesting. I guess the suspense, it works, but splitting the action. I don't think it works necessarily for that kind of is there a lot of action in Carrie?
The final scene where the gymnasium sequence.
Yeah, but that kind of splits the horror then. You want to like give people focus on each individual horror. If there's three horrific things going on simultaneously, that's not as scary.
Like, it doesn't work with that kind of action going on.
Yeah, you don't want to see a movie where Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein monster are all attacking simultaneously. Sure. It's like, who fucking cares?
Exactly. Calm it down. You don't know until you try, right? So he tried it, and he went, no, it's not working. We'll just go back to just showing whatever's happening.
Right.
But what's kind of fun during that sequence is he says, the interesting thing about making a movie that's that successful is you get to see the succeeding remakes and see everyone get it wrong. Which I thought was an interesting statement. Like he was talking about, I think, a TV movie version of it where it follows the book very closely and the mom dies of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, like, when we were at the writer meetings, and I was like, is this seriously how we wanted her to, like, you have this evil woman. Do you really want her just to die of a heart attack? That's not exciting.
Yep.
So that's when I came with the idea of crucifying her. You know?
Yeah, and there's nothing satisfying about it. Well, the thing about Carrie is it's a good horror movie in that it keeps you off base. Like, it introduces you to realistic scenario,
mm-hmm.
but then something you've never seen before, which is like, are all these girls throwing tampons? What the hell?
Yeah.
That's jarring. What's this about? Mm-hmm. What kind of movie is this? I was like, okay, but she's also got superpowers. What? She's got superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like a real grounded thing about, it's like bullying and this guy. What?
Yeah.
What's this? And then they have the wonderful hand coming up dream sequence.
Yeah. That was his idea again.
Yeah. Which everyone remembers mm-hmm. and which scared the holy shit out of
me. Oh, scared me so much the first time I saw that. In fact, I was sitting with Eve's watched it and she was sitting beside me, quite drunk, obviously, but.
You had some vomit on your shoulder.
Just a little bit. It's okay. She's going to pay for the... Well, Mary is. So then she turned to me and she goes, oh, that still gets me. Even though I know it's coming, that still gets me. You know?
Yeah.
And
We watched it.
It actually much scarier when she comes back home. And you know the mom is in the house somewhere, but you don't see her.
Yeah.
It's like a long sequence of her bathing and cleaning up from everything. And
there's all these moments where you think like things are going to be all right. They give you enough of like, it's going to be okay. Oh, that problem solved.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to be, no, it's not. Were you there when we watched it?
No, I don't like watching movies. I don't like watching movies I like in big groups.
Okay, yeah.
Because I don't think a big group setting is a good way to watch a film.
Yeah, I watched it with our friend David Fine and, mm-hmm. And Allison Snowden. And they had some girls who were friends of
Ross
who had not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that scene gets a scream. Oh man, that scene gets a scream. Well, they didn't know what they were seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was awkward too, because you're teenage girls watching the, you know,
Shred.
Throwing tampons and all this kind of stuff. And
it's kind of weird, but
it's a little weird. There's a lot of nudity right off the top.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it reminded me of when, again, we first got our VCR and rented movies and was like, oh, this is what it's going to be like.
Gotta get that one.
Yeah.
I think Brian De Palma likes women, and I think he likes the stalking element of film in that way, that kind of voyeur element, which is in a lot of his films.
Yeah.
Now, what else was interesting that he's talking about?
It's unignorable, by the way. That's one thing about that movie.
Oh, sorry.
You can't. It goes. You're paying attention. If you start the movie with your lead naked, having tampons thrown at her.
Yeah.
Well, you're not gonna be talking to your friend like, anyway, it's a movie casually. You're watching the movie. Like, what's gonna happen? Yeah. And then it carries you through the whole damn thing.
I haven't seen. I kind of want to see the new one just to see what they did with. I can't remember the actress's name. She was in Kick-Ass and things like that.
So. Oh, okay.
You know who I mean, right?
Chloe Sully.
Yeah,
is she right. Carrie?
I think she's Carrie in the new.
Oh,
in the
wow! Yeah. Like, I know they had Carrie 2.
The Rage.
They've had other Carrie situations, in the past.
Well, like I say, there was a TV movie that was kind of like The Shining. It was a faithful adaptation, and you know, it's one of those things that you learn why you shouldn't do faithful adaptations of books, which is there are elements of books that work on the page, but to take those and put them into a film, it doesn't work as well because, you know, what's scary in a book, the atmosphere you can create in a book, you know, or your imagination, once you take your imagination and make it into physical objects like the topiary animals that start attacking them in The Shining. You know, it's an okay sequence in the book, I guess. I don't even remember it, actually. But you know, in a movie, it's just laughable. Like, to see stuff like that. I mean,
well, you
a bunch of bushes hopping around, like, what?
Yeah, I mean, there might be a way to do it and have the rustling of the bushes, and it's creepy. And you know,
yeah, if you don't show it.
Right.
If you make it.
Right. I mean, the creepy idea is like, did that just move? Whatever it is.
Or if they are moved, not just did it move, but if things are moving out of eye line, right? So when you turn around, then they're moved. That's freaky. But to actually see them moving, that is not freaky.
No.
And I'm shaking my head right now.
No, it wasn't freaky back then. Like when, you know, when it was Kubrick time, it would not have been free. They wouldn't have had the technology to really make it look right.
I think.
And then when they made them CGI now,
boo. Even worse.
Yeah, even way worse.
But I think in films, they've agreed that there's only one thing that's freaky, which is Fridays. But the interesting thing that he said about, the next film he did, I feel like I'm just spoiling the whole documentary, but anyway, I found it really interesting, his views of his films. He did The Fury, which I don't know if you've seen The Fury. It's an okay movie.
Mm-hmm.
It has people exploding. It's all right. But mostly it was mostly like he was just given a chance to do a really expensive film for that time period. And, you know, just do it. Like, we'll pay you and you just make this movie. So he's like, okay.
Just do it.
You know, because what the heck, right? He seems to have that element of like, oh, I'm just a kind of a journeyman, you know, actor, whatever. Oh, that's right. He was talking about doing Obsession with Cliff Robertson and Genevieve Bujold. And that was interesting because Cliff Robertson, it turns out, is an asshole or was an asshole.
Okay. A real Tom Smothers.
A real, worse than Tom Smothers, I think, in a way.
Okay.
Like, he recognized.
By the way, if Tom Smothers is listening, I'm sorry. I really do like your work.
Yeah, Yo-Yo Man's great. Cliff Robertson, who wasn't his first choice, but they needed a big name actor to get funding for the film. So he became the only kind of person who would agree to do the film. But Robertson, who's not a great actor, realized that Bujold was stealing the movie out from under him. Like, her acting is so great. She's such a great actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see her very much now, but yeah, when she was like in her day, like Dead Ringers, so good, Dead Ringers, and Choose Me, like the film by Ellen.
I've not seen that, but okay.
Oh, Welcome to L.A. and Choose Me, Ellen. God,
everyone's shouting at the podcast right now.
It's so close. It's on the tip of my head. He was an assistant for Robert Altman, and gosh darn it, so close that I'm making the show stop so I can try and remember Ellen Rudolph. Yay! But anyway, it's just like, remember when Vicky was on the show and we couldn't remember the name of
her brother-in-law.
No, the guy who played Falcon in the Anthony Mackie.
Yes.
And I was driving home and I went, Anthony Mackie. Damn it. But anyway, like most times we forget people's names. But anyway, she's doing really well in Obsession, and it was making Cliff Robertson crazy with jealousy. So he started sabotaging her.
No.
He would she would be talking to him, he would move, he would move out of her eye line, start like bending sideways to make her have to follow him, and it would ruin the shot.
Yeah.
Or he would deliver his lines totally flat to her. Like, so he'd just be like, no, I love you, don't go. And then she had to act off of that kind of cue. Still, she was killing it though, right?
Yeah.
She's a really good actress. But it was interesting. And then because he insisted on wearing using this makeup on his face that was like this brown goop that he would just make up his face with, Vilmos Zsigmond, the cinematographer, finally got so angry he grabbed him and pushed him up against a wall and said, "You are the same color as the wood paneling. How am I supposed to light you?" Yeah, so it's pretty good. And then the one thing he said that I thought was really interesting was, I'm going to skip way ahead. We won't talk about Scarface and stuff. All that's really interesting. Oh, I'm going to say one thing.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
We were going to do this other thing, but you know, let's do this next time.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Okay.
Because it seems where you're at.
If you're interested, if I'm boring you, then just stop me. Okay. Scarface was also interesting because it was a project actually that he started developing with a different writer. The writer would not meet with actors. He would just write. But if he had to do a meeting, he'd leave the project.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that happened. He left the project. And so De Palma said, and I'm of the time period where if a writer left the project, the director left the project. That seemed like how you do it. So when he left, I said, well, you know, I can't stay on the project without this writer. So he left. And so they brought in Sidney Lumet and Oliver Stone to work on it.
Could do worse.
At the same time, De Palma had been developing King of the City. And so he was working on that for a long time. Sidney Lumet decided he wanted to do that. So De Palma was pulled off that project, and it was given to Sidney Lumet.
Oh, brother.
And so then De Palma was put back onto Scarface. And so he's, and when he came back onto it, they had changed quite a bit. They'd moved it to a Cuban, they'd, or made him Cuban. They'd moved it to Miami.
Because Scarface was a remake.
That's of, right. Of the a Paul, gangster. The Paul Mooney film directed by Howard Hawks. That's right. That's right. And so, yeah, and it was interesting. One of the interesting things he said about it was that the big shootout sequence, what happened, Al Pacino went to grab his gun and he grabbed the barrel after it had been firing and it was, it's burned his hand. And so he was in the hospital for 2 weeks. So they had this 2 week no Al Pacino. So basically he says, I just had to shoot sequences without anyone there, without Al Pacino. So I just had all these stuntmen and stuff like that. So I just was, okay, let's have guys come in this way and we'll shoot them here. And how about if they, the door explodes and a bunch of people fly, you know, and they just kept making up stuff. And Steven Spielberg came over for a couple of days and he did some, shots as well.
Wow.
Just to have some fun, you know, he's like, well, what if we do this? And so they shot to that. And then finally Al Pacino returned so they could do the sequences. But yeah, I know it's interesting. And it was, then he was talking about, oh, I don't want to talk about that film because, everybody, if you haven't seen the movie whose name has now slipped my head, I love it so much.
Star Wars.
But I can never remember it because it is called, it's one with John Travolta and...
Blowout.
Blowout, yes. I love that film so much. And that's interesting because when, you know, it was going to be a $5 million film. And when Travolta joined, it became a $30 million film.
Oops.
Soon as...
Yeah.
Oops, because, you know, it's a 1970s movie being made in the 80s.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen that, see that.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
So good. So I won't talk about that much because I don't want to spoil the ending of that film.
If you're one of these people who is like, why does John Travolta get so much work now? You know, and you're like, what's the deal?
See a movie like that.
Yeah, see that.
Yeah.
See Blowout. Yeah.
Yeah, and understand, like, he's a really good actor.
Yeah, he makes terrible choices. It wasn't all Grease time.
It wasn't all Urban Cowboy.
Yep.
You know, and he makes terrible movie choices, but that one was a good movie choice. And I think he really sells it. And went along with De Palma's vision as well. The interesting movie I want to talk about was Mission to Mars, which actually I don't mind that movie. I know that it has a weird kind of metaphysical element to it, but I'm not opposed to metaphysics in books or movies. And I really like the Tim Robbins sequence in the film, if I'm thinking of the right movie. Yep, yeah.
I believe so. Yeah, there was two at the same time.
I know that.
Yeah.
But I think that's the one. And apparently, but De Palma came onto it late. There was another director attached to it and then he left the project. So De Palma basically just inherited this thing already ready made.
Right.
What's interesting is he talks about CGI in that film and he says the problem with CGI is pre-visualization because you as a director or writer or any other creative person involved in the process have nothing to do with that. You basically get a ready-made sequence given to you and he says, and it's just full of cliches because they already have stuff flying past the camera. Towards you and past the camera. That's already, it's in their program. So it's easy for them to put it in there because they don't have to do any extra work. They just plug it in and it runs. You know, so many parts of it are all done before and it's already in their program. So they can just easily add those things in. They might have to change some of the look of it and stuff like that. But the essential parts of it are already there. And so you just get these boring, mundane sequences that aren't interesting because there's no creative element to it. It's just programmers or you know, people just plunking down stuff that they already know.
That's a good point, yeah.
And I thought that's a really interesting point, you know, because sometimes you can see CGI that works pretty well, not very often. And the problem with
someone like a James Cameron who will work so closely with the CGI has a vision for it.
But also uses it sparingly. You know, like you can watch a film like, you know, and it's an older movie now, but a movie like True Lies, it's full of CGI, but you would never know it because it's not obviously CGI.
I guess I'm thinking of something like a Terminator 2, you know, where it was kind of the star of the show, but it moved things along.
But it's the star of the show, but it's not obnoxiously the star of the show. There's still lots of real elements
and
to it.
And one of the few films that it still holds up CGI-wise. It doesn't look like, oof.
Well, it's a film that wouldn't have been made if they couldn't have done what they did for that.
Well, it wasn't that... Oh, sorry.
Not and the same with The Abyss, too. Like, if they couldn't... That's where that... The the developments that allowed them to do T-1000 is because they were able to do that water alien in the abyss.
But it wasn't.
But that's another film that was held up. Production was held up while they developed that.
Oh, interesting. That
technology. Yeah.
Yeah. And both of them like seem to be character based things. And
it's not a big part of the.
Yeah. It's not something you're supposed to go, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, again, a couple of weeks ago talking about seeing the movie Poseidon, and it starts with a CGI ship, and you're supposed to go, nice. It's just like, no,
it doesn't look any good.
But it like, yeah, they pull it off. Okay. Back to De Palma.
See, Titanic doesn't pull off the CGI very well either, though.
Yeah,
because it was so new.
Yeah, that doesn't hold.
It almost looks like, I don't know if you remember when you were a kid and you got those little sheets with, and you could rub on them and transfer them onto a picture.
Yeah, love those.
But that's what it looked like in the movie, right? It looked like it was just a rub-on transfer.
Folks, what were those called?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where there was like those sheets and you rub them and you transfer it onto a picture, and they'd actually there was a lot of like breakfast cereals that would have them as a prize.
Yeah,
and, they're
a lot
really
of fun.
Really like those.
Mm-hmm. You'd often wreck them because you're impatient.
Oh, you wreck them. You get half a Batman, on there. And they were like, oh, the Joker won that fight. But what were those called? Do you remember? If you do, let us know. Back to Dave and De Palma talk.
I think I've said all I wanted to say. I mean, I recommend...
What's your favorite De Palma film? Is it Blowout?
Yeah, Blowout for sure.
Yeah.
I love Blowout. I think it's great. I love The Untouchables, too. I think that's a really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw The Untouchables, that was one of the biggest reactions... Mm-hmm. of an audience through the whole thing. It was like a roller coaster ride. Yeah.
He really knows how to make that work. You know?
Yeah, and that was excellent use of Sean Connery at that time.
Yeah.
It just like, I mean, maybe I'm incorrect, but it felt like that's what blew Sean Connery up again. And everyone was like, whoa, who's this guy? Put him as the second lead in all your things.
Yeah, yeah. Here's Casualties of War, which is a film I enjoy.
That's the Sean Penn, Michael J. Fox?
That's right. It's not a film you can enjoy. It's a very grueling movie about a terrible thing. What's interesting is when they're filming it, I wouldn't have got made without Michael J. Fox being involved in it. He was the person who brought the money to the project.
Right.
But Sean Penn, there's a sequence in the film where Michael J. Fox walks into a room and there's the four soldiers. John C. Reilly was in that film. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I was watching. I went, John C. Reilly. A young John C. Reilly.
I would hope so. It'd be weird if it was an old John C. Reilly.
His brow is less crushing his face than it is now. But there's a scene, he walks in and there's a guy sitting in, and Michael J. Fox hits him with a shovel and then confronts Sean Penn's character. Well, apparently they did a couple takes of this. And then they do another take. Michael J. Fox walks in towards, and Sean Penn steps up to him and punches him right in the face and knocks him down. The next take, perfect. He was so mad that it just made the take. And then there's another scene where... he whispers something to Michael J. Fox as he's leaving the courtroom, and Fox gets really mad. And apparently he whispered television actor to him, and that got, and then De Palma laughs and goes, I love working with Sean Penn. Someone to recognize that someone's having trouble in that situation. I don't think I shouldn't say he punched him in the face. He knocked him down.
Yeah.
You know, he knocked him down and got him mad.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, he just knew that Sean Penn or Michael J. Fox having trouble getting to that spot of rage that he needed for that sequence. And gave him that impetus, you know, just, I'll push you down. Now you're mad at me. Now be mad, you know, like, or, you know, you want a reaction here? Television actor, that's going to get you mad to accuse you of not being a movie star. It's good. The same way that he showed up for Carlito's Way with his hair permed and shaved back. De Palma wasn't expecting that. He just showed up looking like that. And he's like, that's perfect. That's the character right there. You've made the character, you know, like.
And he went, this isn't for the character. Do you want this for the character? This is just how people are wearing this now. That's the style of the time.
Which I think is another fine De Palma film.
Mm-hmm.
And he says about that film, when it came out and it flopped, he said, I don't think I can make it a better movie than that. Like, I don't know why that didn't work, because, like, I think that's a great film. But, like,
you just got to get on to your next one.
That's exactly that's how it goes. And I think people were kind of like, oh, De Palma made a gangster movie. And Al Pacino's in a gangster movie. You know, it's probably too Godfather 3 and stuff like that.
Maybe people were tired of gangster movies at that time. You don't know what people are in the mood for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Maybe they're not in the mood for weird haircuts. It's disturbing. There's a lot of guys with male pattern baldness who are like, I want to take my mind off this and I don't need that in my life. That's why I like Sean Connery wearing all his toupees. It makes me feel comfortable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, apparently that whole staircase sequence was improvised on the spot.
From Untouchables?
Yeah.
What was the staircase scene? The Battleship Potemkin?
Yeah, the Potemkin sequence.
How did they improvise a Battleship Potemkin scene?
Because they just needed a sequence and they didn't really have anything for that part of the film. So they're just like, okay, well, let's just do this. And so they started working it out.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that just got so angry about that. That's just Battleship Potemkin. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So he's ripping off Battleship.
It's called homage, guys. Yeah. I think he knows what it's from. He's having some fun with
it. And
it's not exactly shot for shot.
I'm trying to remember the movie, but like there's the scene in where he the guy's, you know, he screamed like a stuck pig when I stuck him in the thing. And it's Kevin Costner's not going to kill the guy, you know, who killed another guy. Not going to spoil it in the movie. This is Untouchables. And then he drops him off the roof. And falls into the car, and it's a good scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's another movie with that guy in it who does almost word for word the same thing. It's just like, you know, when I was your friend, I killed your friend, and he was a big baby when he killed. So like, this is not the kind of thing you say when you're on a roof.
with a person who wants to kill you.
I was at a trivia night, and it was Eric Fell, former guest of the show, and Sean Stewart, former guest of the show. And they showed this clip, and they were like, look at this guy. What else was he in that he does almost exactly this thing? It's like, oh, yeah, that's just exactly what
he is. A very kind of rat face, very narrow face guy. Yeah, good in that sequence. Yeah,
and boy, everyone cheered during that bit. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Justice.
Justice.
Forget the law, Ness. Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Dave, I think that brings us to the end of this week's.
Right?
Yeah, we're how much time we did?
Oh, yeah, I guess we're getting there.
Okay, cool.
I feel bad. I just, instead of... Well,
don't feel bad. Why do you feel bad?
I just because I talked about a stupid movie for the whole show.
You did? No, that was fine. Are you apologizing to these folks? Make it a good apology then.
Guys, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, make it a Canadian apology.
I truly am sorry. Well, I'm only half Canadian. But I'll tell you what. If you are upset with me for talking about one movie for the entire show,
right?
Please write to me at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. That's our email address. You can go to our website and leave a message, a hurt message for me on our website at sneakydragon.com. You can go to Facebook, Sneaky Dragon, also there. Leave a little post. Say, Dave, how dare you waste an entire show with your stupid movie talk? Or Twitter, sneaky_dragon is our Twitter handle. And you can tweet me there and say, Dave, you broke my heart with your overlong, boring Brian De Palma talk.
Now, Dave, what if someone wants to ask you a question?
Someone demands to know more about Brian De Palma, which I probably don't know more than that, guys. This is all I shot my wad. You can write to us at those aforementioned, you know, but you probably want to keep your message private, is what I'm thinking. So email is probably best, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. You can ask us a question. We will answer it for you. Any kind of question you want to ask us.
Yeah.
We will answer it to the best of our ability.
Which might not be very...
It can be personal. It can be financial. It can be legal advice.
Spiritual.
I just want to point out we are not lawyers. Our legal advice
is... But we do know where the lawyer's store is.
We know where the lawyer's store is.
But we can buy the wigs.
That's right.
We can buy the gowns.
We can look like lawyers. So it's almost the same thing.
If you guys want to get a gavel, we can get you that gavel.
Sure.
For just a little bit above retail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shipping and handling included. Right.
Gavels are us.
Yep.
Those are all... You can also ask us... You can also,
if you need some gravel with your gavel... We also have access to that. So if you get nauseous when you're pretending to be a judge, you can get that gavel gravel.
You can also ignore that last comment. And you can ask us, give us an answer? Is that what they can do? They can ask us a question or give us an answer.
That's right. If you give us an answer, we will come up with the question.
We'll come up with the question for you.
So say, give me just an answer and I'll give you an example here, Dave. Let's just give me an answer. And
Ian's hair.
Ian's hair?
Yeah.
What's the best looking part of this show?
So it doesn't have to be a correct answer.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Okay. So thanks, everyone, for listening to De Palma Talk. We appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Find it interesting?
Yeah. I don't know why you don't feel De Palma Talk was working out. We talked about other things. We did a restaurant review. Did you remember that?
That didn't work out at all.
Now you're slamming my bit. That's what I brought to the show. Oh,
sorry.
Feels terrible.
I know, but if you do two a night, that's what you can expect.
All right, folks. Thanks very much for. I guess we're just. We beg your forgiveness at the end of this. Jeez, it's tough. Tough but fair.
Tough crowd.
Okay, tough crowd. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, if you don't like it, go fuck yourselves. I guess is what Dave's saying. Is that what you're saying?
What is this? An audience or a podcast painting?
We'll be back next week. You probably won't, and we respect that. Anyway, I'm Ian.
I'm Dave.